Alrighty.
Welcome to another NABBW teleseminar on a topic of huge interest to Boomer women and their families, help for parents of boomerang kids. This is a topic I've personally dealt with, and I'm sure many of our listeners have as well. In fact, when I first started talking with Wendy, she told me that parenting adult children is vastly more complicated today than in generations past. Mothers, she says, are consumed with worry, guilt, and indecision, and with good reason, since polls show that 68% of parents have at least one grown child with one or more serious issue, including substance abuse, illegal activities, or divorce. In addition, 59% of parents are providing financial support to their children who are no longer in school, and 40% of adults ages 18 to 30 who aren't students either live at home with their parents or recently did. So this is clearly a topic for us to discuss, because certainly when I started out and held that first of my two children in my arms and was suddenly overwhelmed with this vision of 18 years stretching out forever in front of me, and I'm going, oh, my God, how am I going to last for 18 years? And then, of course, my daughter's 35 now, and I know that it doesn't stop at 18. So clearly, it's an important topic, and I'm glad that that you're here, Wendy, to talk to us about it, but I haven't introduced you yet. So let me start by introducing myself, and then I'll introduce how the call will go and Wendy, and then we'll get on with the call for all of those of you who are listening on the call and want to know what the plan is. My name, as I said, is Ann Holmes. I'm your moderator and the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, an organization dedicated to educating and empowering women at midlife. This call, like those we do every month, is one of the ways we serve our membership. In a moment, I will introduce our guest expert, Wendy Bourne, so we can start our discussion. But before we launch into our topic, let me say a few words about how this call will proceed. For the next 45 minutes or so, the phone lines will be muted, and Wendy and I will be discussing tonight's topic. Then I'll open the lines for questions from our listening audience. If you have a question before the lines are open, use the box on your computer screen to type it in. I'll see that and pass it on to Wendy at the appropriate time. One more thing. Wendy has an offer for those of you who are listening on the call, and I'll get to that later. So be sure that you stay on the call long enough to find out about that, because it is it's a wonderful offer. Now, moving forward, our guest tonight, Wendy Bourne, is the author of a relatively new book, I Thought I'd Be Done By Now, Hope and Help for Mothers of Adult Children Searching for Peace, Book 1. This book is available in bookstores and online. For more information about it, you can go to Wendy's website, which is www.mothersofadultchildren.com. Now, before we launch into our questions, I'll be glad to tell you a little bit about Wendy. She received her bachelor's degree in English from Bucknell University in 1967. Following graduation, she married, moved across the country, and spent 11 years as a wife and stay-at-home mother of two. After that came graduate school and a Master of Counseling degree from Arizona State University. For the past 35 years, Wendy has served as a psychotherapist to more than 1,200 adult clients, including hundreds of midlife parents. In addition, for 15 years, she taught over 1,000 adult learners in college counseling psychology classes, during which time she regularly received among the highest scores on student evaluations. She also developed and facilitated more than 200 workshops and presentations and has been interviewed on radio, internet, and in print. She's continually fascinated by the power of language to inform and inspire. Wendy began her career in the addictions field, where she developed and implemented innovative family treatment programs for 8 years. For the last 25 years, she's been the owner of a private psychotherapy practice specializing in transitions, parenting, grief, addiction, and relationship issues. A member of the American Counseling Association and the National Board for Certified Counselors, she is licensed as a professional counselor by the Arizona... I'm sorry about that, but I seem to have gotten disconnected from my own call, so I'm sorry if there was dead air there for you. But I'm back again, and that's never happened to me before. I don't know how it happened, but let's just jump in back where we were, Wendy. I won't get all the beginning stuff again.
I was sitting here thinking, now what do we do?
I would have warned you if I'd known it was going to happen, but all of a sudden I just hear this beep, beep of, you know, I've been disconnected. So that was a shock. All right.
Okay.
So we were talking about the challenges of kids and their terrible two. Well, I was going to talk about how you've written about the challenges faced these days by parents of adult children, and I alluded earlier to how we all, or at least I, remembered my terrible twos age and my teenage, and I thought, oh, I can't wait for the time when they'll go off to high school, and then when they graduate, they'll either go to college or to work, and you know, I'll see them at the holidays, but we won't have all this stressful stuff going on in the meantime. And, of course, that's just really not how it happens in the world these days, because somewhere along the line, something happens to many of our children. They suffer a job loss. They don't get into grad school. They break up with a spouse. And suddenly, there they are, back on your doorstep, and all kinds of new parenting challenges emerged. So, Wendy, we're delighted to have you here, and apologize again for the interruption in the call, but I'll give you a chance here to say hello.
Okay, hello. And I'd like to welcome our listeners, and glad we're all back together. Hope we didn't lose anybody. So thank you for your introduction, and which actually I didn't hear the end of, so I don't know whether anyone else did either, but it's okay. You said most of the salient things about me and my career and a little bit about me personally. To fill in the details about my personal life, I am here tonight primarily as a mother, a fellow mother of adult children. Yes, I am a professional and have been for many years, but really it's through my own personal experience that I became interested and perhaps now an expert on the topic of parenting adult children. And when I say expert, let me make it clear that I don't know everything there is to know about this topic. I find it to be infinitely challenging and always humbling as I continue my own growth journey in this area and as I fall back and do old things that I used to do and try hard not to do anymore. So I'm here from that humble place. I have two adult children. They are 44 and 46, which seems impossible but is true. And I have three grandchildren, the oldest of whom is 22 years old. That's a boy, a man, actually, and a 21-year-old man, and a 14-year-old granddaughter. Two of the three were raised very close proximity to me, and I have been very much a part of their lives. They're my daughter's children, and my other grandson lives in Texas with his dad, my son, or near his dad, and I don't know much about him. I don't know him nearly as well as the other two. So I was involved, of course, with parenting my own children, but also with being a parent of sorts to my grandson, whom I really have helped to raise, and who is as dear to me as my children are. So, and now my granddaughter is the same, as she's getting older, and I'm enjoying being a part of her life as well. So that's probably it now. Shall I go on then, Anne?
Well, sure. I'd like to ask you a question. I mentioned in the introduction, and hopefully part of the introduction that people were able to hear, I mentioned that you started your career, your professional career, as dealing with people who had problems with addictions, and then you've developed innovative family treatment programs. But you started in school, you started with a degree in English. So I'm curious as to what led to your decision to become a counselor.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a great question. I was trained to be an English teacher, and that was what I thought I would wind up doing after I graduated from college. But something happened when I was doing my student teaching my senior year of undergraduate school. I was teaching in a seventh grade classroom, and I had a very, very rough time of it. And what happened was I was very tuned in to the children who were especially needy, especially hurting emotionally, who had I could tell, even though I couldn't have described it then, that they wanted much more of me than I could give to them. Mm-hmm. And because I was teaching to the class and I had, you know, things I needed to help those students learn, I was not really, it wasn't part of my job description to tend to these children. And mm-hmm. yet I felt compelled to do so. And so, in fact, I heard from one of them for many, many years, and then we lost touch. But after I left there, she corresponded with me. And so I didn't really know how that was going to play out, and I got married and had my kids and was home as a mom. And then I was getting divorced, and I had to figure out what I was going to do to support my family. And mm-hmm. I knew that I was trained to be a teacher, but I just couldn't bear the thoughts of being a teacher and not being able to tend to these children. So I spoke about this with the counselor that I was seeing at the time to help me through my divorce, and mm-hmm. she said, "Why don't you become a counselor?" And that thought had never crossed my mind, never even considered such a thing. And it was a relatively new field in those days, and I didn't know what was entailed. And anyhow, here I am, all these years later. And that was a much better fit because, of course, I am able to help people on a one-to-one basis or sometimes as couples or families. Mm-hmm. So I'm so thankful that I went on that little journey. I continue to have a great love of language, and I've always loved writing, and that, of course, led me to write this book that came out and the one that's going to be following it next year. So,
mm-hmm. Excellent.
That story.
Excellent. And in case the part about your book is part that didn't get covered before, I'll say again that the title of the book is I Thought I'd Be Done By Now, Hope and Help for Mothers of Adult Children Searching for Peace. And as I said, this is Volume 1 because you're coming out with Volume 2. And this book is available on your website as well as in the normal places that people mm-hmm. can find books. And the website, let me say again, since I don't know if that's also something that we missed before, is at www.mothersofadultchildren.com. So having said that, so people can go to the website to find out, you can buy the book from the website, of course. So
yes.
Let's get back to where you were. You started as a counselor. It sounds like from what I've read of your bio that you started with addictions work, and yet by this time, of course, you were a parent yourself. So did the fact of being a parent yourself lead to your interest in working with mothers of adult children? I don't think your kids were adults yet at this time.
Oh, no, they were young. They were mm-hmm. 7 and 9. I didn't ever have any interest in working with mothers of adult children. I did work with parents of younger children, mostly adolescents. I did a fair amount of that, but I never even thought of the concept of being a parent of an adult child until the crisis that occurred in my personal life led me to start exploring that topic. And maybe I'll mention that what that crisis was, because it really has led to where I am today. And that occurred about 10 years ago. My daughter, who, as I mentioned, lives close by, is a very sweet-spirited, calm, easygoing person, and rarely raises her voice, and a very patient person, and so it is highly unusual to see her agitated about anything. And we were together for a family gathering after Christmas 1 year, and I was doing what I did best back then, which was telling her how I thought she should handle a situation with my grandson, who was then about 11. And she, unbeknownst to me, had been stewing about this kind of behavior on my part for quite some time, And I didn't know because she hadn't talked with me, or if she did, I didn't hear her. I'm not sure which. But all of a sudden, she blew up, and she started yelling at me, and I was so shocked because I don't know if that had ever happened before, maybe once. And what she said was, if you don't stop criticizing my parenting and let me do my own thing, you're not going to be allowed to see Kevin anymore. And
that's pretty powerful stuff.
Yes. There really couldn't have been any more shocking words that she could have spoken to me, I don't think. Partly because I was taken off guard, but partly because that would have been the worst thing that could ever have happened to me, because Kevin was and still is the light of my life. And I think I fancied myself an equal parent to her, and even in many ways a better parent than her. And so, and, you know, she was feeling, and I would do this correcting in front of him, which, you know, was really terrible because I was undermining her authority. I didn't realize I was doing those things at the time, but looking back, I know I was. And when she said that, I was shocked and dismayed and said, well, of course, I don't want that to happen. And what are we going to do about this? And she said, why don't we go to counseling together? And so I believe in the counseling process and have been in counseling any number of times through the years for different things. And so I said, okay, that's a great idea. So I got the name of someone who works with parents of adult children and their adult children. And I didn't know this woman at all, which was important. And off we went a few weeks later. Now, I thought at the time that that counselor was going to say to my daughter, you should be so grateful to have such a wonderful mother who knows so much in your corner helping you. You know, she is older and wiser, and she's been through all the things you're going through, and you should let her help you. I was convinced of that. Little did I know that this counselor knew then the things that I have learned since. And instead of saying what I was thoroughly convinced she'd say, she said, Wendy, you have got to mind your own business and let Kim parent her son her own way. Even if you don't approve of it, it's none of your business. And she was pretty blunt, and I didn't know her, and she didn't kind of ease into that. She just let me have it. I think she knew that's what I needed. And I was as shocked as I was when my daughter first made her announcement to me. And I was furious. I was absolutely furious because, first of all, I thought she was really underestimating me, that she was being very disrespectful to me, and that she didn't know what she was talking about. And so I stewed and stewed, and we went, we left, and we came back again. And I guess maybe I thought maybe she would have seen the error of her ways by the time. By the time we came back, but no, she was more determined than ever to have me look at my need for control and my need to be right and so on. And so to my credit, I stuck in with her for the next couple sessions that we did with her until I really got what she was talking about, and it took a while because it was a very bitter pill to swallow.
Oh, I can certainly imagine that. I, as you're talking, I can think of a couple of instances that I know of similar times, similar sorts of events with my own daughter, who's the 35-year-old of my two children. She told me she lives in another state, and I only see her a couple times a year in person. The rest of the time, we talk once a week on the phone, and she doesn't have children, so we would never have been talking about dealing with her children, but she likes to talk to me about her trials and tribulations at work. And so she would go on and on these phone calls telling me about what's going on at work, and then I would try to fix it for her. And finally she just blew up at me and said, "Mom, I don't want you to tell me how to fix it." And I said, "Well, then why are you telling me?" "Well, I want to share it with you. I want to tell you about it. Right, but I don't want you to tell me how to fix it." And I was just flabbergasted because I was a mother all this time. I thought my job is fix things for her.
Absolutely.
And so for her to stand up there on her own two feet and say, "No, I'm sharing this story with you adult to adult, but I don't want you to fix it."
Yes, and good for her for standing up to you in that way. I'm forever grateful to my daughter because she started me on this journey that I really needed to be on and didn't even know I wasn't on it and didn't know I needed to be on it. So, yes, so so that's what propelled me into my own search, my own personal journey to try to figure out, well, what does it mean to be the parent of a young adult or the parent of an adult? She wasn't even all that young when that happened. She was in her 30s. And so I realized that I didn't know anything about it. And I started reading books, and I started, you know, searching my own soul and started talking to people, and began to realize that none of us seemed to know much about it. It was really a mystery, I think. And I know that for me, I was applying my rules for being a parent of children at home to being a parent of adult children, whether they live at home or not. And the rules all need to change. It's a continuation of what needs to start to happen in adolescence as we begin to let go, as we should begin to let go anyway. But I felt so justified in throwing in my two cents, especially
because
if I really thought that she
were
was making...
You were knowledgeable. You were expert.
Well, not only that, but I would see things that she was doing that I think were really going to harm my grandson. And I remember saying that to the counselor. I would say, "Okay, but what about the things that she's doing that I think are or not doing that I think could really be harmful to him? And I have a right. I'm his grandmother. I have a right to stand up for him." And she said, "Only if you're invited." And she said, "You don't really. You don't really because you're not his parent." And she said, would you rather be right or have a relationship with your daughter and your grandson?" And that was a new concept for me that I have come to think is a very valuable one and often pass along to mothers who are in the same boat. And I know, you know, to give myself the benefit of the doubt, which I really have since then, I know that when our children are little, we can fix things for them. You know, they fall down and rip open their knee, and we, that's their owie, and we kiss it, and we bandage it and wash it off and everything, and they get better. And and there are so many things as for our children as adults that we can't fix, and yet I think we still feel compelled to do so. And that's one of the new rules I had to kind of take into my consciousness, that if she does make mistakes, that's part of her journey. If they do have adverse impact on him, that's part of his journey. And really, unless she wants my input, I have to let go. Now, you know, paradoxically, what's happened over the years is that she's much more open to me being a part of how she parents now, because she trusts me to not feel like I have the right to bust in anytime I want and and try to on my white charger and try to get her to change her way of doing things. And so we are much closer today than we could be back then. And that's one of the paradoxes that I've found is true of when we try to control someone, we have much less influence on them than when we start to let go of that control.
And
so.
And absolutely true. And of course, the part where she said to you, if you want to continue to see your grandchild, and I certainly know that there are people who move away so that their parents don't have the opportunity to influence. I know of a situation where the family lived in Illinois, but the daughter and her spouse and children moved to Hawaii because that was the farthest they felt that they could get away from her parents and still be in the United States.
Yeah.
I almost thought that was an interesting scenario that they came up with. Sad, but interesting.
Probably pretty common, yes.
Okay.
Because these are not my issues alone, I've come to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what led me to ultimately want to write my books about this
mm-hmm.
subject, that I kept talking with people and my clients, and I started getting, after a few years, not right away, believe me, because I didn't know anything, but after a few years, I started getting some referrals to work with more moms specifically, and sometimes dads specifically, on their issues with their adult kids, and I was heartened to find that most of us are in the same boat in terms of wanting the best always for our kids, wanting them to succeed, wanting them to feel good about their lives and themselves, and having trouble extricating ourselves from making that happen.
All right.
Pretty common thing.
I would gather that you're correct based on the examples that are so many examples, wonderful examples in your book. But before we talk a little bit more about your examples in your book, and I believe I'm going to ask you to read a couple of the essays there. But let's talk
mm-hmm.
about how do you see that parenting has changed currently from say one or two generations ago.
Well, we have moved from a philosophy of parent-centered parenting to one of child-centered parenting within the last three generations anyway.
Mm-hmm.
When I was growing up in the 50s, there really was virtually no consideration of a child's self-esteem. And in fact, I think the term wasn't even coined back then. It really wasn't something that parents thought much about, if at all. And
no, I think the phrase was, children are to be seen and not heard.
Well, I was just going to say, I know that I was taught, as were many people of my generation, that children are to kind of be in the background, they're to be seen and not heard, they're to be nice at all times, and they're kind of to fit into their parents' lives rather than the other way around. So
mm-hmm.
my parents, very devoted, loving parents, their focus was to see that my sister and I were well-educated, that we did well in school, that we were good to people, that we were of service to others, that we received cultural opportunities. But there really wasn't, the support was primarily educational and financial rather than emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also a clear expectation that we, by the time we left for college, that we wouldn't be coming back. And I
mm-hmm.
hear that time and time again. And I know in my case, I realized some years after the fact that although my parents always talked about me going to college and wanting me to go to the best college I could and have the best education possible, there was never any discussion about what I would do after college.
Mm-hmm.
And the expectation really was that I would go to a very good school and find a great husband and not come home. And that's exactly what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, part of what has happened over the past several generations is that there's been a kind of a gradual backlash to that approach as young adults became parents and wanted their children to have some of what they missed out on.
Mm-hmm.
And started, you know, being more interested in how their children were feeling and how they were feeling about themselves and the quality of their friendships and, you know, how their teachers treated them. And now the pendulum has swung kind of way to the other side. Today's parents are sometimes too child-centered in that they feel responsible for their children in every way.
Mm-hmm.
And often well beyond the child years. They feel responsible for them financially, intellectually, but also emotionally. They feel responsible for their children's self-esteem, and they're much more engaged and involved in every area of their children's lives. Now, that is not a bad thing, but as the children get older, the parents ought to be pulling back and teaching the children to be more and more responsible for themselves and to start to build lives outside of the family. And I think as part of the overcorrection, perhaps for some of the way they were treated as kids, often these well-meaning parents overindulge and or overprotect their children. And as a result of this swing in the pendulum, coupled by the tremendous economic changes that make it so much more difficult for young people to make it financially, plus the uncertainty of our times, young adults are not even close to being ready to be on their own, often even at 25, much less 18.
And so I've observed that with my two children. I don't want to interrupt you too much, but just as an example, my mother felt that she was totally unprepared when she got married. She didn't even, she claims, and my dad agrees, that she didn't even know how to boil water. So she had to learn all of that. So she determined that she wasn't going to let that happen to her children. So as soon as I could drive, I got sent to the grocery store to do the grocery shopping with a blank check because I had already been going along with her and observing how to shop.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that that was very useful. So when I had my children, I followed the same plan. As soon as each of them could drive, they had been with me, they knew how to shop, and I gave them a blank check or a debit card and sent them off to do the shopping. And what they both tell me, my son and my daughter, they both tell me that when they got off to college and they got out of the dorm and they started living in an apartment with friends, they were the only ones that knew how to shop.
Yes.
The rest of them, they had no idea how you buy groceries.
Exactly. I would agree. I think that's pretty unusual and good for you for helping them and be feel empowered.
Well, they did appreciate it now as an adult. And, you know, when they found out that they were the only one who knew how to do it, they appreciated it. But at the time, they felt that they were very, very picked on children because
they
had stuff they had to do, and their friends didn't have to do jobs, and they would have much preferred to not have to do those jobs. But I don't want to digress too much away from, let's talk a little bit about factors that make being a young adult more complicated today than previously.
Okay. Well, we, as I said, live in uncertain, anxious times. There is economic instability and volatility. As we know, the unemployment rates remain high, and more graduates, either from high school or college, find it difficult to find good jobs. They may find jobs, but jobs that might lead to them being able to be on their own are hard to come by. And then, you know, add to that the underlying and constant threat of terrorist attacks and nuclear war, and even our newish unstable weather patterns, and you just have much higher anxiety than you have in decades past. And and additionally, I think there are so many more options for young people today, and they feel so much pressure to find the perfect place to fit in, the first perfect job, the perfect career. As I mentioned, when I was a young adult, I pretty much knew what the expectations were for me, the first being to find a husband and start a family. And then really, I mean, even though I know there were a few other options, most of my girlfriends either became teachers or worked in the medical field, usually as nurses.
Right.
And or secretaries,
right?
And as a result of parents today emphasizing their children's happiness over some other qualities such as firm discipline or structure and guidance, young adults often feel unequipped to deal with the stresses of being an adult, and they have little motivation to climb out of their safe cocoons and leave home. Especially if mom is still cooking for them, like you said, shopping, cooking for them, doing their laundry, and letting them have their friends come over. I mean, there really aren't very there isn't much incentive to being on your own where obviously there'll be a lot more deprivation, and or the parents will be subsidizing in major ways,
right,
as your statistics suggested. So, so it's way more complicated today, and so I do think it's important to understand that. That, and because so many parents, I think, still despair of when are these kids ever going to be on their own. You know,
right,
recent brain research tells us that the frontal lobe of the brain, which is responsible for having us be logical and orderly and using good judgment and those types of tasks, isn't even fully developed until 25 years old. That's not to mention learning how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is new information that's helpful, I think, for parents to understand that we do need to be more patient with our kids in some way in terms of what they just don't know how to do. They tend to be impulsive, impatient, and those things in part because of the lack of their brain being fully developed, as well,
mm-hmm,
as some of these other issues that we've mentioned.
All right.
So I think understanding that it does take longer to launch today with all the complications, including their own brain deficits.
Well, from that point of view, I guess I'm curious whether you think that we should, you know, look to a new paradigm where kids don't go out on their own at 22 or at 18, but they do stay in the home until maybe in their 30s. I guess we're all living longer, so maybe we, you know, since there's an expectation that people of our age could be living into 90s or even 100s, you know, that part of staying in the family compound, you know, maybe that should be lasting longer. I'm not sure if that's something that you think is a good idea or not. So maybe we should talk about
I think there
the
is
issues.
A new paradigm. I think that,
mm-hmm,
the new paradigm is lengthening the amount of time it takes to get your children fully launched. And it's based on all of these factors. And that shouldn't stop us from moving in the direction of helping them to become mature as soon as possible. So that, because that's how they feel good about themselves, when they are,
mm-hmm,
able to like, you know, the kids that are staying home, playing video games, having their friends over, working at McDonald's, sleeping all day, staying up all night, and their moms are cooking for them and doing their laundry, they don't really feel good about themselves because they,
mm-hmm,
they don't have a plan. They don't have – that's not ever going to be a good situation for young adults. But to have more of a compassion for all the tasks involved in – being a successful adult for parents is helpful, because parents so often either just kind of give up and say, well, I guess I'm stuck with them forever, or they are impatient and judgmental and controlling and demanding of them. And there is a place in between that where you can steadily move them along by helping,
mm-hmm,
them to become more empowered while remaining patient of the tasks that have to be completed before they can get there.
Okay. I would guess that's one of the issues that today's mothers of adult children struggle with. Are there other issues that we should be discussing and bringing out to the forefront here that boomer,
yes,
women might be struggling with?
Yes. I think that this is part of what's so complicated about being a parent of adults. We worry about them. We worry about them a lot and their ability to take care of themselves well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big issue. Mothers and fathers, too, struggle with feeling guilty, feeling a sense of responsibility when our kids aren't doing great in all areas. And we feel often are comparing our kids to how other people's kids are doing, and coming up short and blaming ourselves, and parents are tortured by these worries and their guilty feelings. We struggle with wanting our kids to like us. So many parents today want their kids to like them, want to be their friend. It's not mm-hmm. really a good model for parenting. You don't want them to hate you, but liking you is secondary to helping them become effective adults. And really, we have to find a way to be kind and firm. And that's a concept that escapes a lot of parents. And so because parents want their kids to be happy and they want them to like them, they often have a lot of trouble setting firm limits, having reasonable expectations for them, setting boundaries and having consequences for those boundaries. And where that becomes particularly problematic, I think, is where you do have the boomerang kids coming home again after college or after a divorce or when they lose their jobs. And then without a clear plan, often the parents are just constantly frustrated. And so those are some of the issues, I think, that some of the complex issues that parents of adult children struggle with today.
Okay. Very good. And let's talk then, going from that to what are some of the main themes that you cover in your book?
Well, I think that maybe the most important message that I want to give to parents is that we must all learn to accept that we have done the best job with parenting our kids that we are able to do with the information and understanding that we had at the time. This has been really important for me in getting past the guilt that I felt when I started really exploring what I had done with my kids that if I could do it again, I wouldn't do. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that if we'd known better, we would have done better. So forgiveness and humility are big themes in my book. And by humility, I don't mean humiliation. I mean instead that believing in our heart of hearts that we aren't any worse and we aren't any better than any other hardworking parent trying to do the best job at the hardest job in the world. So forgiveness and humility are really important themes that I go over and over again. So when I realized that in many ways, even though I had always sworn I wouldn't, that I'd become a variation of my mother as a parent, she was, as I said, very involved and engaged, but tended to be critical and controlling and unemotional. That was really bitter medicine, and I felt deeply ashamed. But gradually, I came to accept and love myself as I am, and flaws and all. And so that's how I was able, through the forgiveness process, to transform the humiliation or shame that I was feeling into true humility. And that's been a wonderful gift. So.
Excellent.
So just a couple other thoughts real quick about the other major themes include things like whether and when to give advice, big issue for parents. The answer is almost never, except when invited. I'm talking about unsolicited advice, how to empower our kids without enabling them, and how to deal with our own disappointments and to allow the dreams that we might have for our kids, which are not dreams that they share, to die. And that's a big one, because so many of us had so many ideas about what we wanted for our kids, and it turns out they very well may not share those dreams. So,
excellent. Very, very good to be aware of that. And I'm sure anyone who's listening who is a parent has certainly, a parent of adult children has certainly realized that, and it's a very tough thing, especially because I think sometimes that realization is only fleeting. But let's take a break here and talk a little bit about the offer that you want to make to our listeners, Wendy. You're offering a discount on your book, and I'd love it if you could tell people about the details of that.
Sure. The regular price of my book is $17.95 when you purchase it from my website. And until the end of October, I'm going to be reducing the price to $15.95 plus shipping and handling. And we do get those books out within a day or two after the orders come in. And I'd love to have anyone who might be interested, if you're identifying with the kinds of things we're talking about this evening, might want to read that book. And it's available on my website, mothersofadultchildren.com. You can use PayPal. We have PayPal availability. If you don't want to use PayPal, then you can just drop us a quick note, and we'll give you information on where you could send a check. And so,
all right. Do they need to put anything in the email that they send to you, which would identify that they are taking part in this special offer, or is it
that would be
something
helpful? Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And so, would they be the best way to communicate with you? Would be through your email address?
Yes, and it's listed right there in the shopping cart.
Okay.
Yep.
Excellent. So all they need to do is go to www.mothersofadultchildren.com. They'll find the email address. They'll be able to
order.
There
are links on every page to buy
mm-hmm.
the book, and there are also excerpts from the book, so you can see if you like what I have to say. And there's my blog too.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a wonderful blog. I urge anybody who's listening to take a time to check out the topics that you discuss in the blog. I found it an excellent. Information
you.
That you've got available there. So good. I'm glad that we've made sure that people know about this offer. It's a wonderful, generous offer, and I appreciate that you're making it.
Well, I want to get the word out as much as I can to parents that they're not alone, that there is hope, that you can learn all kinds of new skills on how to deal with worry, how to deal with guilt, how to feel more effective, how to help your children feel more empowered, and how to get closer to them at the same time, which
mm-hmm.
is, you know, ultimately that's what we all want. We want to feel close to our kids. We want to feel like we're important to them, and because we know they're important to us, but we want to feel as though they want to be around us, that they value their time with us, that they enjoy being with us, and that is all possible. So those are all things that I speak to in this book,
mm-hmm.
and in the one that will be coming out in 2014. That's volume two.
All right. Okay. Well, so I guess we could tell people then that you do believe that it's possible for moms to learn to reduce how much they worry, and that through the book you'll have some information on tools that they can that you teach to help moms feel less guilty. Is that correct?
Yes. I wonder if I might take a moment to talk about worrying, since it's such a huge topic.
Oh, please do. Please do. We've got time.
Okay. So, you know, worrying is like, I don't know, this quote I love. Worrying is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it gets you nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And today, anxiety that leads to worrying is an epidemic. And we talked about some of those things that are contributing to anxiety. Doctors are writing tremendous numbers of prescriptions for anti-anxiety drugs, and people are desperate to escape how uncomfortable they feel with the things they worry about, and I think children are at the top of that list. So most people feel they have no choice but to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to offer hope that that is not true. So pain is inevitable, but worry is optional. There are tools that we can learn to use to address our worries that allow us to have peace of mind, even when difficult things are going on in our children's lives or in our relationship with our children. So the inevitability of worrying is just not true.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about what would you say is the most important tool that mothers can learn?
In terms of dealing with their worrying, I wonder if I might just read one of my little essays.
I was going to ask you to do that next, so go ahead and jump in with that now.
This one's about worrying. And I have a title for each of my essays and then a little closing thought, a one-sentence closing thought. This one's called Worrying is Not Just for Dogs. It's amazing how critically important petty little issues can seem to me at the time they arise. Whenever my adult children tell me something troublesome that's going on in their lives, my immediate tendency is to jump into action, as though they'd called the paramedics instead of their mother. Often they just want to vent or process something that's happening in their lives, but I tend to convert this musing or this sharing into an issue that calls for me to ride in on my white horse to rescue them from impending disaster. I turn their simple need for me to listen into a full-fledged cry for help, and then I start spewing unsolicited advice. This intrusion results in increased tension as my children understandably become defensive. So here's an example. When my son shared that he was paying just the interest on a credit card bill, I was horrified. I immediately launched into a lecture in the style of Susie Orman or Jim Cramer with fangs about what a terrible mistake this was, how he might as well be burning his money, how it will take him 20 years to pay off his bill. Luckily, before I got too far into it, he interrupted me. "Mom, wait," he said. "You didn't let me finish. I've never done this before, and I'm only doing it for this 1 month." Subdued, I skulked away, tail between my legs.
Mm-hmm.
My tendency is to grab a hold of an issue and worry it like a dog worries a bone. After shaking and mangling and pulverizing it beyond recognition, it's not the issue that disappears, but rather my serenity. Today I'm training myself to breathe deeply and wait a while before saying anything after my children share with me. Often I wind up saying nothing. Often, then, after a good night's sleep, the mountain has turned back into the molehill it always was. As I learn to stand back, monitor my worries, and observe my reaction before stepping in where I haven't been invited, I feel relieved. I'm sure my blood pressure, my fingernails, and my children are similarly grateful. Chewing on our adult children's juicy issues wears down our composure.
Wow. That's a great essay.
Thank you. So that's just one way. There are many, many tools that that parents can learn to deal with their worries, with the guilt that they feel, and with how to feel effective with their children.
Mm-hmm.
So learning to listen deeply, as opposed to jumping in and trying to fix or control, stopping giving unsolicited advice, as I just mentioned. I'm a work in progress in that area, but certainly have made a ton of progress. And learning how to take ourselves less seriously, learning how to laugh at ourselves. As you can tell from that essay, I can laugh at myself now. I can be open and vulnerable about the mistakes that I make and that I'm learning, but my learning will never be complete.
All right. Excellent. Well, I would like to hear another essay, but I'm watching also our time. And
yes,
I think
see
we
the
should
time.
Do first is I'm going to open up the call so that any of our listeners who have questions, they can speak out and ask a question. I see that we've got several questions here, so
okay.
If people are hesitant to jump in and speak one out loud here, I'll read some of the ones that have been sent to me. But the line is open, everybody, so please, someone, ask Wendy a question. Who wants to be first?
Hello? You're welcome here.
Well, All right. Since I'm not hearing anybody, I've got a question that came from that's in my screen here. It's from Dorothy from Las Cruces, New Mexico. She says, our 22-year-old son will graduate from college in December and wants to move back in with us after 4 years of living on his own. My husband and I are worried. How can we make this work for all of us?
Well, that's an excellent and relevant question to our conversation this evening. Certainly, there are many, many young adults, and not even not even that young, returning home to live with their parents for periods of time. I would say that some of the tools that will be helpful in that endeavor are to have heart-to-hearts with her husband about what their expectations are going to be for this young man returning home, that it's going to be so important for them to just determine, for example, are they going to charge him rent, which I recommend, even if it's not a lot. Are they? What kinds of things is he going to need to be able to do for himself? Is he going to be in charge of his own laundry? Are they going to ask him to do other things since he will be a part of the family again? And maybe most importantly, to then have a meeting or a series of meetings with their son to look at what might need to, what his plan is. Because so mm-hmm. often they come home, they don't have a plan. They just know they aren't making it on their own. They want to be in the comfort of their little cocoon, and they don't really have a move-out plan or a plan to complete their education, or they just are kind of hanging out at home. And so I do think these kinds of decisions need to be discussed as a family. And so he is an adult now, even if he's not fully functioning. He is an adult, and his needs must be considered, particularly since he's been on his own for years, to some degree, maybe not financially, but he's been living apart from his parents, and he has a lot of his own ideas about what works for him. For example, he may not have a high priority on keeping his room clean. My feeling about that is that aside from keeping food in your room, really, as a young adult, he should get to decide what he wants his room to look like. And then they can just mm-hmm. close the door as
right.
long as he understands that no food can be left in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that people power struggle about all the time. If, however, his bathroom is shared by guests or others in the home, then he will need to be responsible for keeping that bathroom clean on a weekly basis and picked up in between. But really, they must work as a team, and they need to have a plan, but the parents also must have compassion for the fact that their son is having to be back in a place where he probably wasn't in his initial plan.
Right.
And so always with the eye toward, so, you know, what's the next step, and how are you doing, son, with that, and how's the job search going? How can we support you and help you in being able to be on your own again?
Excellent. I've got another question here from Mary from Morro Bay. She says, how to handle adult children who banish you from their lives for no logical reason, will not mm-hmm. accept calls or answer texts, removed from their social media sites, but she mm-hmm. still accepts gifts for themselves and children with no acknowledgement. My daughters are 31 and 28, living in different states than myself. There was a divorce 10 years ago. Father abandoned all of us living overseas, gave them no closure.
Oh, dear. Well, my heart goes out to you, Mary. This is every parent's worst fear, I think, to be estranged from their children. And it especially when you don't even know what's going on. Of course, you know, I don't have any way to really know what's transpired, or and certainly no way to know what's going on with your children. But I personally believe that estrangement is virtually never a good answer, because what it means is that parents don't have a chance to hash it out. I'm so thankful to my daughter that she didn't say, that's it, I'm not going to talk to you anymore, and you can't see your grandson. I'm
mm-hmm.
so thankful that she told me, yelled at me, and that it woke me up, and that, you know, our relationship has benefited since then. The one suggestion that I can make, given that they have removed you from contacting them in any direct way, you still do have the ability, at least, to send a snail mail letter because you do know their addresses because you're sending gifts, which they're accepting. If you could write a letter from a very humble place using what are called I statements, a letter I as opposed to you statements, so saying things like, I am so sad to be out of contact with you, and it breaks my heart, and I would really welcome the opportunity to see if we could hash things out. I would be open to hearing whatever your concerns are and to trying to learn and make changes that would allow us to begin to rebuild. That kind of a letter, if you do that, I would suggest that you have a number of people read it before it goes out, looking for anything that might be a trigger for them, since obviously they must feel very hurt, very wounded in some way. So let some people read it and try to give you honest feedback before you send anything like that. And the other thing, if there's no response to that, then I would continue to do your part to stay in touch. So I would continue to send. Most parents, after a while, they just give up. I always say, please don't give up. You can't give up on them. You can continue to tell them that you love them. You can continue to tell them that you keep them in your thoughts and prayers, if you do, that you would that you continue to hope that at some point they will allow you back into their lives. And you can't do it like every day, because then they see that as a total turnoff. But to have regular contact, to send a card, a thinking of you card, from time to time, every month or two, and just to try to maintain a bridge, even if the bridge is coming just from your side. So,
excellent. All right, I've got more questions that have come in, but let's find out if there's anyone who's live on the call who's got a question. I'm giving you another chance here. Speak up, please. Okay.
You're typing.
I hear typing, too.
But I don't hear a voice, so.
All right. Well,
all right.
I've got a question from Marilyn from Phoenix. She says, how does one know when the transition point occurs between parenting at-home kids and adult children? Is it a matter of age, geography, as in where they live, or is it maturity or living circumstances or something else?
I'm not sure I understand that question. Could you read me the beginning of it again?
How does one know when the transition point occurs between parenting, in quotes, at-home kids and, in quotes, adult children?
What would you say that? Do you have a sense of what that might mean, Ann? Because I'm not sure what they're actually wanting feedback about.
I'll explain.
Oh, good.
Okay.
My question was, you talked about really different techniques between parenting your children at home and parenting children later. And where does that, what is it that determines the difference between one and the other? Where is the graduation from parenting at home kids to, you know, parenting?
In other
adults?
Words, how do you know when they're ready to go out on their own? Is that what you mean?
And yes, and how do you know when your relationship needs to change?
When it's time for you as a parent to set them free?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, all right. Well, that sounds like a complicated question that probably would have to be considered on a case-by-case basis. I guess some general guidelines would be that if you were monitoring your own reaction about how you feel about having them at home, you might feel a natural inclination to say, I would like this to come to an end here sometime in the next 6 months. If it has to do with the readiness of the adult child, you'd have to be looking specifically at, how are they going to support themselves and how can we help them become financially and emotionally ready to be on their own? what kind of other support do they have in their lives that will help them? Are we going to want to continue to financially support them? And if so, under what circumstance and how much would we want to do that and for how long? I think that having conversations with the adult children can be very illuminating in those circumstances, because oftentimes I've found that the kids sometimes feel like the parents don't want them to leave. And sometimes the parents don't want them to leave. I've had lots of parents say, I don't mind if he comes home and lives with us after college. I'd like that. I miss him. I'd like to have him. And that might not necessarily be what's best for him. So always having dialogue about how the adult child feels about being at home, and whether they do feel any ties that aren't necessarily the best for them, that would be helpful to talk about too. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else with questions? I've got another one here. It's from Betsy from Charlotte, North Carolina. She says, after years of arguing over how she parents her children, I am estranged from my daughter and her husband. The saddest part for me is that now I don't get to see my two little grandkids. Is there any way back for us? And this is a question that I've heard time and time again.
Yes. Oh, I hope that that you will persevere with, similarly to what I was suggesting to the woman with the children that she's estranged from, that can you give a sincere apology to the ways that you have, with the best of intentions, been too controlling or too invested in what they were doing, and that you'd really, really like to have a second chance. Sometimes saying I'm sorry can really be magical words, and I find it amazing how few people our parents are able to utter those words, and perhaps you have, but it's really hard, I think, and that's why I talked about humility in terms of my own process, as well as one of the big themes in my book. I think it's really humbling for us to face the things we've done that we wished we hadn't done, and we must forgive ourselves, and we can ask to be forgiven. We can say, I am so sorry. Will you forgive me? And could we try again? I want to talk about, what you need from me, how I can support you without controlling you, how I can help you to feel good about our relationship again. And then if that door is open, there may be a chance to rebuild.
All right. That sounds good to me. I hope that it helps Betsy.
Yes.
Is there anyone else who's listening who has a question? Okay. Well, let me check again to see if any new questions have come in. No, I don't see any more new questions here, Wendy. So I know that I want to tell everyone who's on the call that I want to remind them that your book is titled I Thought I'd Be Done By Now, Hope and Help for Mothers of Adult Children Searching for Peace. And this is, as you've said, Volume 1. And do you have an estimated date, Wendy, when Volume 2 will be published?
It'll probably be next summer.
Okay.
It's
so
written.
They've got plenty of
editors. It's on its way, but it'll take a while to launch.
Well, what I like about this book is that each page is its own essay. I am a person who has trouble writing short, so the fact that each of these essays fits on one page, I think, is just wonderful, because as I read them, and they're on topics like being too available, the good enough mother, the roots of our disease to please, the pros and cons of worrying, the you'll see it when you believe it, the gifts of empowerment, mothering a largely thankless endeavor, I can identify with that, and detaching from the drama, that was one I can identify with myself. So wonderful topics. Those are only a few of them. What are there, 185 essays?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There are. And what I'm hearing from people is that they love the structure, the format of this book, because it is these little sound bites. It's these short one-page essays that take, 5 to 10 minutes at the most to read. And a lot of people are keeping it in their bathroom.
Uh-huh.
And on top of the toilet. And I've gotten that feedback from quite a few people that in their busy lives where they don't have time generally to read in large quantities, they're taking these essays and savoring them one at a time. And that can be read one a day, or you can read the same one for several days if there's information that seems new. And so it's easy to digest that way.
Right. Or they can simply page through it and look for one that has to do with what their personal frustration of the day is. I think that it
mm-hmm.
works that way, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly hope that all of our listeners will take advantage of Wendy's special $2 discount on her book, which is available. This discount is available when you order from her website before the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
And Hanukkah comes early this year. It coincides with Thanksgiving instead of crossing over being close to Christmas. So I think it would make a great Hanukkah or Christmas gift for parents who worry about their adult children or their relationships with their adult children. We've discussed this earlier, but I want to make sure that people go and check out your website, because you have loads of wonderful information on it, not only the information about the book, but as we've talked about, your blog is there, and I think that your blog posts are wonderful. As a person who started out with my blogging, and I tried to blog 3 times a week, and that worked for a while, and then I started to say, well, I can write once a week, but that's about the... I don't know what to say more than that. I think you've got some wonderful blog topics, and I hope you'll keep up the pace with getting out the frequency that you're doing. So wonderful stuff on that website at mothersofadultchildren.com. And from there, if you have a question after the call, you can email Wendy right from the link that's on the website. So a great place to go, that website, for more information after the call. Wendy,
yeah,
is there anything that we haven't talked about?
Well, I just
about?
Wondered if I might close by reading one more of my essays.
That'd be wonderful.
In the spirit of, thinking about what are the things that we need to learn in order to live our best lives, even if we are having troubles in our relationships with our kids. And I do think that learning to laugh at ourselves is one of the most important traits we can have, as I mentioned, because it does show that we are taking ourselves less seriously and that we're lightening up. And that's a lot of what it takes, because these issues can be so heartbreaking, and yet we often don't have to have broken hearts. So this one's called Learning to Laugh at Ourselves. The great actress Ethel Barrymore said, "You grow up the day you have your first real laugh at yourself." This truth can help us mothers take our problems less seriously by learning how to lighten up. Developing the ability to see ourselves as part of a cosmic joke is usually about coming to understand that the world doesn't revolve around us. It's humbling and comforting to accept that we are all flawed. That's the human experience. Lasting growth can come through the humor generated by seeing the absurdity in difficult issues and truths about ourselves. When I feel despondent about some situation in my children's lives, it seems impossible to inject humor into the scenario at first. But even cultivating the desire to lighten up sometimes helps me to do just that. For example, I'm learning to recognize the telltale signs of one of my more useless self-torture devices, which I call building my case. Here's how it works. I spend hours thinking up all the reasons why some course of action my children are taking is doomed to failure. I convince myself that only I can save them, and I set about preparing an ironclad case that would be the envy of any trial attorney. After careful preparation and often sleepless nights, and before either considering the wisdom of this action or asking their permission, I launch into a passionate delivery of my opening arguments, My poor children then do their part of the dance by rolling their eyes and telling me that I'm overreacting, which is usually true. It's taken me years to realize that not even once did my children benefit from my carefully constructed diatribes. Today, by shining a light on the absurdity of this endeavor, I recognize the early warning signs of building my case, usually before I do any damage. It's a relief to remember that I am not the queen of the universe, just a world-class drama queen. And the closing thought is, knowing how to lighten up and laugh at ourselves is a gift to us and our children. So
wonderful.
I want to thank everybody for being on this call, and thank you, Anne. It was enjoyable getting to share about our kids, and it was wonderful to hear from some of you, and I hope you will all be gentle and kind and compassionate towards yourselves as you explore these issues, and thank you for being here with us this evening.
Thank you, Wendy. I've really enjoyed having you as a guest, and I hope that people will go to your website, buy your book, and take advantage of the wonderful content that you've made available both in this call and in this book, and I can't wait to see book two, and maybe there'll be book three and four after that. So
maybe.
So thank you
very
much.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.